Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's terrific to have you company for another episode of the show. Now today, I'm joined by a very special guest. I'm speaking to the one, the only, Professor Ramesh Balasubramaniam, who is the head of Perth Oral Medicine, and he's well known in WA as being the leading oral med specialist over there, but is also known as the trainer of the next generation of oral med specialists. What's really interesting in this podcast is how we get to explore the three big facets of his professional life. There's his academic life, there's his practice life, and then he's got this absolutely wonderful business called Perigold. This product is developed called Perigold, and how he's been able to commercialize science and turn that into a therapeutic product that is absolutely going to change the way that we treat our patients. And I'm really excited to share that with you because I think there's so many business lessons that come out of this. There's so many life lessons that come out of this. And what I'm really impressed about Ramesh about is that he's driven to impact the world. He's driven to improve people's lives. And you can see the passion in him. You can hear the passion in his voice. And listening to how he's been able to juggle and to balance and to make this ecosystem of these three elements of his life, come together in harmony. He's been able to, create a wonderful life for himself, create a wonderful career for himself, and to create a wonderful impact beyond himself as well. So I really hope you enjoy this podcast with Ramesh. He is one of nature's gentlemen. He's smart. He's kind. He's just an all-round good fella. And I hope you enjoy this podcast because there is tons and tons of gold coming from it. Here's Ramesh. Hey, Ramesh, welcome to the podcast. How's things in Perth, mate?
Good, Jesse. Thank you for having me.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to this podcast for quite a while. Everyone knows you as Professor Ramesh, the oral medicine guru from WA. But there's a whole backstory, mate, as to how you became involved in oral medicine, how you got involved in academia. So can you just take us right back when? Did you always know you wanted to get into dentistry?
Well, Jesse, I sat next to a guy at school who was equally lost, I guess, going through year 12. And I asked him, so what are you going to do next year? He goes, oh, I've just seen this thing about dentistry. Apparently, if you do a year of science, but it's really hard to get in. But it's got fantastic job prospects. And he goes, what do you think? Do you reckon you'd do dentistry? I said, dentistry? I never thought of it. Man, I'll just go. And so I went off and observed a family friend who was a dentist, and how it worked out is he didn't get in, and I became a dentist.
Oh, wow.
Which is interesting. We still keep in touch. So that's essentially how dentistry landed on my lap. There's no mentor that inspired me to remove enamel, and there was no odontoplasty god out there that that eventually sort of forged a path. But it's pretty much just a chat with a mate who was equally mischievous at school.
Now, mate, you go and do dentistry. Did you always think that oral medicine is going to be your path, or did you kind of come to that later? It's not a common specialty compared to some of the others.
You understand the concept of diagnosis by exclusion, right? So I'm sitting in a third year lecture. I'm going, this is not happening. This is very boring, this pediatric dentistry stuff. And I'm not enjoying the wire bending. I don't like foggy mirrors. I'm going to be in trouble here. I've got to figure something out. And then obviously there were lectures around temporomandibular disorders, and then the area was so vague, and there was a lot of controversy. People had different opinions, and I said, this is a thinking sport. I like this. Less hands, more thinking, and I think this might be the way to go. And so, by fourth year, I decided that I wasn't going to be a general dentist for long. But to specialize, you'd have to do your time in general dentistry. So I did do a couple of years before heading off to the US.
And you went to Penn, right?
Yeah, initially I went to the University of Kentucky, and Professor Jeffrey Oakerson, So he's, as you know, one of the world's experts in temperamental disorders. So I spent 3 years in Kentucky. And what was interesting is during my time away, oral medicine became a specialty in Australia. And a colleague who's also a world-renowned facial pain expert by the name of Chuck Green took me aside and said, you know what, you better go on and specialize in oral medicine, because when you head home after all this training, you'd hate not being recognized as a specialist. And I thought, you know what, that's sound advice. And so I got in touch with my folks who knew, because they assume I was coming back after 3 years and studying in the US, not cheap, but they were supportive. I did put myself through, but they said, you know what, if there's a shortfall, we'll try and support you. So I went on to do an extra 2 years at the University of Pennsylvania, and that's where I ended up with my training in oral medicine.
Wow. Okay. So you go to the States, 5 years all up, you mix with some of the leaders of the field, Okerson and others, names that we see on textbooks but probably don't get to meet, but you actually get to meet the people behind the textbooks. How was that experience?
Unbelievable. I mean, it was unbelievable. I guess I consider my time in the US as a very fortunate time. I spent time with Donald Falaise, who wrote the textbook on dental management of the medically compromised patient. Then at Penn, I spent time with Professor Martin Greenberg, who authored Burkett's Oral Medicine. Just world leaders. As a result, I actually had an opportunity to stay on in the US, but Perth is a wonderful place, Jesse. It was difficult, families here, so there was certainly always a desire to return home. It was, that was an easy decision ultimately.
Yeah, and I'm curious to ask you, with that time in the US, how did that shape you, being immersed in the American culture, not just the dental culture, but the American culture more broadly? How has that shaped your thinking today, and what's been the impact of that for you?
I tell you what stood out for me in the US, you know, when the going gets tough, there's culturally, they roll up their sleeves and dig deep, and they're hard workers. One of the things that struck me when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, we had to be on call. So, as part of your oral medicine training, you would support the oral maxillofacial surgery department by being on call with one of their what they call senior residents, and a standard week where they considered you to be overworked would be 80 hours.
Yeah.
Now, I remember filling out these surveys, and I thought it was quite funny that they wanted us to fill out these surveys because, obviously some issues around poor young residents dozing off, driving home after, literally being in clinic all day, being on call the next day all day, and then going back to clinic, haven't slept, have not slept for, what was like 36 plus hours.
Yeah.
I think that just wouldn't happen in Australia. But so, and that builds resilience. I mean, I'm not condoning, that sort of work ethic. But what it does do is builds resilience. You kind of have to do it pretty tough. Yeah, I thought that's something that I took away from the Americans. It did at least at the time, sort of came in and said, wow, this is a new definition of hard work.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's lots of things I love about America and Americans, and one of them is their work ethic. They really do, as you say, roll their sleeves up and get the job done. And one of the things I also really like about Americans is they celebrate success. I think a little better than Australians. We've got the tall poppy thing here, and that doesn't seem to be so prevalent there.
No. People are proud to stand on stage and actually celebrate their own success. There's no, they truly believe they've done the hard work and they've been awarded something, and they'll say, "Did you know that I received this?" And there was no shame in that. In fact, others around would say, "Wow,
yeah.
Wow, did you do that rather than, oh, is he talking about himself? Is this about him? But rather that, you know, there's almost in culturally, they'll say, well, we should actually join him, acknowledge this man or this lady because they've just done something really special. I did pick that up. There's a lot of that, you know, there's a lot of, they're heroes. I think the culture is built around heroes. I guess Hollywood feeds into that as well. So, and it works, within that framework, it works because you celebrate success and failure is just another opportunity for success.
Yeah, I love it. I really appreciate the way they do that. And I'm curious to ask, you came back to Australia, so you've done your 5 years at Kentucky, then at Pennsylvania, and then you've come back, you've registered as a specialist, presumably, and you've entered specialty practice. What were those early years as a specialist like?
Well, yeah, interesting you say that. So I come back to Perth and oral medicine, don't forget, this is before national registration.
Yep, okay.
So oral medicine is recognised in places like New South Wales, Victoria, obviously Queensland, and I think it was South Australia, and that's it. So WA, no specialty in oral medicine, right?
Oh, no.
So I have to come back and register as a general dentist and, quote, limited to oral medicine. Now, fast forward, a couple of colleagues, myself, without getting into the details, we managed to schedule a meeting with the then health minister, Nicola Roxon, and basically made our case saying, hey, this is not consistent with the rest of the country. And yeah, she thankfully recognised the need for specialists in oral medicine and supported the specialty being recognised in WA. So that's how it got recognised initially. And then once we got specialty recognition, not long after, there was national registration. So it was across the country. So that's how oral medicine started. Now, early days when I first got back, I did the full scope of oral medicine practice. I would see a bit of mucosal disease, some medically complex patients, no general dentistry, no restorative work. It was all around pain, chronic pain and temporal mandibular disorders. And I'm thinking some of your listeners are thinking, gee, I couldn't think of the worst thing to do because, as you know, some of these patients can be very challenging.
There's a special place in heaven for oral med specialists, mate. Let's just say that.
Sometimes I get young dental colleagues so distressed about getting a complaint, saying, oh, you know, I've got a really disgruntled patient, and it's horrible, I'm really struggling with this. And I kind of tell them my routine day. I said, there is no routine. And I guess that's what makes it, for a better word, fun, you know? So that's where I started. And then there was an opportunity to be part of the pain management, pain medicine department at Sir Charles Garner Hospital. And then there was also an opportunity in 2009 to be part of the, at the time, Princess Margaret Hospital, now the Perth Children's Hospital. So I was the first oral medicine specialist to be part of that team, part of the cleft lip and palate and craniofacial team. So there were lots of opportunities. And of course, as you know, then I gradually, around 2008, started forging an academic career as well.
Yeah, so this is actually really interesting because one of the things I've always admired about you, Ramesh, is your ability to juggle, there's kind of three big areas of your life, and I'd like to touch on all of them today, but obviously you've got your academic life, and I want to explore how that became about Also, you run, a huge practice in WA. You've got, multiple sites, and you're managing all the complexities around that. And in addition to that, you've, launched into taking your academic research and commercializing that into products. And so I'm really interested to understand that intersection and how and why that came about. And we'll touch on all three of those things. And you've introduced academic life right now. So how did you find your way into academia? I know that you've trained and taught lots of the dentists in WA for lots of years. I know you've been involved in specialty training of your colleagues over there. How did all that come about?
Yeah, I think the academia as a career is a natural progression that evolves from curiosity, really. One of the challenges in oral medicine, I think that's probably true for all of dentistry, all of medicine, basically every aspect in life now, is this significant barrage of information out there. I mean, it's so challenging to keep abreast of everything that's new technology. I mean, obviously AI is the buzzword now. And as you, I mean, it was, AI a year ago. Oh, you know, we're starting now, everyone's on that, on that ride. And this is the thing with oral medicine. There was so much information coming out. It's actually in some ways challenging to be in a silo, be a single practitioner in a silo and be at your best. What academia did for me is obviously there's the bit, there's all the teaching of dental students. I mean, you do some lectures and you run tutorials and mark exams and people have this idea this is academia. But then there's another side to it. The other side to it is these postgraduate students. Some of the brightest people end up doing these postgraduate studies and they challenge you. I have no problem saying this. We often hear, that whole saying of, I've got this postgrad student, and people sort of go on about how challenging it is to manage teaching and all that. But if you flip that, you say, wow, this student is challenging me to actually keep ahead, and because they're doing that. And, especially now they can go online and look up PubMed and tell you, actually, that's not quite right. I just read this paper. And yeah, I've learned to be less embarrassed now and more curious and go, have you? Can tell me about that, and that's just a change in mindset rather than seeing that as a challenge. You kind of say, wow, this young man or this young lady knows something that I don't. I might actually benefit from this interaction. And you do. They challenge your thinking. And, as a natural evolution of that is you do research. They've got research projects. And so I get involved in research. As you know, Jesse, I've written a couple of textbooks, contemporary oral medicine and a new one recently as well, a handbook. So, all of that, I think actually complements what I do in private practice really well. It makes me a better clinician.
There's quite a lot to juggle in amongst all of that, Ramesh. I mean, there's managing university life, and I'd imagine that within the university, as you said, there's your responsibilities and things to deal with, and then there's obviously the admin and someone associated with that. But then there's your practice, right? And again, you've got a wonderful practice in WA, and it's incredibly well thought of, well regarded. It's the premier oral med practice in all of the West there. And I wanted to ask you how you manage just the business side of things as well. For the audience here, managing these competing priorities would probably sound like a lot. How do you delegate? How do you work with others? There's only one Ramesh. How do you manage to get it all done and keep those plates spinning, all the balls being juggled well? Because you do do it well.
Jesse, I think the answer, the one word answer to that is people. The people around me, people I trust, leaders who can lead teams. I think this idea that in my this Perth Oral Medicine is me is actually not true. Perth Oral Medicine was obviously my baby. I started the practice, but if you look at where Perth Oral Medicine has evolved to now, three locations, a team of 30 plus, it's too big for me. What I do have, and credit to these people, I've got a loyal leadership team that take this practice to heights that I couldn't possibly do myself. So I think, to be absolutely frank, it's at the point that it's beyond me now. The idea that practice owners should do their own bookkeeping or should write their own practice manuals and perhaps in some cases answer the reception phone. As this happens.
It happens all the time.
It doesn't work. Putting out fires and all that, you just can't do it. So yeah, it's people. I've got good people around me, and obviously Savvy Dentist and the boardroom, they're all part of that journey. Let's be honest, it's not all smooth sailing. There will be many crises, and with time it'll pass. And then everyone talks about how fantastic your practice is, forgetting, hey, there was that issue, and you go through these bumps. But yeah, but if you take a back step and look at what I consider now a successful practice, it wasn't always successful. And now we've got it to a point where, something I'm very proud of. We've got a very the best way to describe it is a massive referral base. You know, in oral medicine, you get trickles from a lot of people. You don't get 10 dentists referring all their patients. You only get one or two patients from, you know, literally 1,000 or so, maybe a couple of thousand dentists, so, and medical doctors and other specialists. So a very different model. It's, you know, so yeah, I think I'll go back to saying it's the people, and you have to really spend time working yourself, working your leadership team. You know, I guess I'm preaching the choir here, aren't I, Jesse?
It's all good. Mate, one of the things, my observation of you as a leader, if I may, and this comes back to what you were just sharing about your students keeping you on your toes before, and one of the things I've observed that I believe is a contributor to your success has been that attitude of I can learn something from other people. And sometimes I find that when we get into practice ownership or whatever field we're in, you know, most dentists are used to being probably the brightest in the bunch, or you know, some of the brightest in the bunch that usually have done pretty well. But one of the things I've always admired about you, and of course your lovely wife Davinia, is your ability to be curious and learn, and to know that every single person's got something to contribute, every single person's got something to teach me. And what that has allowed you to do, you know, my observation, is to focus on these other areas of your life, whether it be academia. And then, of course, you know, building out these products, and it's given you that sense of freedom and flexibility to build the life that you love. And again, I just want to acknowledge that. And I don't want to let that go unremarked upon, because I think it's actually a huge, wonderful personal attribute that you have that's allowed you to succeed to the level you have. So I think that's really, really cool. Mate, can we talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial ventures? You've launched a product.
Yes.
It's called Perio Gold. You know, again, I've seen the process from the outside looking in for a little while now. What was the impetus for that?
Many years ago, when I was at the University of Pennsylvania, and you know, this is some of your audience will probably be aware of this. We got one of my professors at the time, Thomas Solicito, asked me whether I'd be willing to be involved at looking at this mouthwash that was made out of curcumin. Now, one of the biggest issues with this particular mouthwash was if you ever put curcumin in saline and you let it settle, it literally settles to the bottom of that jar. You know, it just doesn't mix. And so he said, "Oh, just swish your mouth around this," because it was part of this oral cancer project he was doing. I'll tell you two things that I remember until this day. I remember it tasted horrible, and it stained bloody everything. Yeah. Right, so that project never took off. Now fast forward to around 2020. As you know, lots of wonderful things happened in 2020.
Yes, yes, they did.
As a result, you know, I guess what the wonderful thing that happened for me was time. I suddenly found out, hang on, I might have some time to do this, you know. Well, catch up time. So I suddenly thought, you know what, I've always been saying that, you know, because I kept up with the literature on curcumin, turmeric, and its anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial properties. You know, it's a potent antioxidant. So then I turned to my lab partner. So I had a dental laboratory at the time, and the dental laboratory was being managed by this really smart dental technician by the name of Brett Chalkland. Now, Brett's one of these guys, right? He can, you know, if I throw an idea out, he'll figure it out. He's just a really, you know, some people got that brain, right? They can kind of go, oh, let's try and figure this out. See, smart, you know, smart guy. Perhaps the thing that wasn't smart was he ended up saying, yes, let's try and do this. This is really cool. So he goes and gets, you can't go randomly and pick up curcumin out of Coles and that sort of, you actually get, you know, curcumin that's been registered to be used as medicine. And he grabs some aloe vera again, you know, as a medicinal use, some elderberry, and he decides to mix this in his kitchen.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. So, and he apparently stained everything. I'm still avoiding his wife. the couch, the white couch. But so out of this, he put this thing together and I'll fast forward and say that, hey, we put this thing together and then we try to find someone locally in WA. That was a challenge. And then ultimately we end up in Barnsley in the UK, yeah, where we were able to formulate what was microencapsulated curcumin. And I'll explain microencapsulated. Essentially, what the problem with curcumin, if you were to take curcumin as it is, it doesn't get absorbed. That's the biggest problem with curcumin. It'll just go right through you. So what's interesting, if you go to a pharmacy and you see curcumin, yeah, wonderful. You know, we know the properties of curcumin, but if it doesn't absorb, it's just going to go right through you, or very little gets absorbed. Now, to improve the absorption, you're supposed to have it with pepper. The problem is if you have, say, a sore or an ulcer in your mouth and someone tries to convince you to put curcumin and pepper, you won't be making many friends out of that. So yeah. With microencapsulation, essentially it's technology where you got, you know, somewhat like a nanotechnology, got this molecule that can hold the curcumin within it, and the absorption is extremely high. Now what that means is that a low levels of curcumin, like 0.1%, extremely low. The absorption is very high. Now, no secrets, aloe vera. I'm sure you know about the aloe vera plant. You know, people burn themselves, it's soothing. It's also got fantastic anti-inflammatory, antibacterial properties, and elderberry, often found in kids' cough mixtures and that sort of thing. Again, a known antiviral, immune booster, and it also contains xylitol. So yeah, now about a year, slightly over a year, we've started manufacturing Perigold gel, and it is available in some pharmacies around the country. And and we've got a series of products coming. There's a spot treatment. There's also a spray. So yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, what's most amazing about this is the fact that, you know, we were able to conduct independent studies, by the way, a couple of studies out of UWA, where my colleague was able to show that it works. So that's something that, you know, interestingly enough, there's a lot of products out there that we use routinely in dentistry with not a single study, but unless you don't know. So yeah, that was really nice. And so yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm not the distributor. I don't market this per se. In fact, this is the first time actually speaking about this. And I think you know the journey quite well, because I've obviously bounced a lot of ideas off you, and thank you for your support there. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I do get that look, Jesse. You know, you talk about academia. You know, obviously I'm a clinician in practice, and as you know, lecture nationally, internationally, and then I've got this side, and people sort of look at me and go, you know, hang on, well, what's he doing? Especially in academia, they don't, you know, you don't get many academics who do this sort of thing, and I guess you don't get a lot of private practitioners who also do this, you know, the other way. I think all of this makes me better the other side of it. You know, so if a good entrepreneur makes, you know, as in a product helps me in my business, the business, like I said, helps academia because I think I'm a more innovative that way. The academics helps my practice and my patients. So yeah, it's in my opinion, it works really well for me. It's a perfect mix.
It's a really nice ecosystem, and I love the fact that you get to explore all of those things at once. I do have a couple of questions about Perigold, if I can, because I'm really curious. You know, my mind goes to the business side of this, of course. You know, you've got this range of products that have come out, the spot treatment and so on. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, why had no one thought of this before? I mean, it's great that you've done it, but you know, you were looking at curcumin way back when in Penn. What happened to that research? Did it just kind of sit dormant for a while, or?
Yeah, no, it didn't. I think there were studies out there on curcumin, and it was happening, but until microencapsulation, you know, this business of nanotechnology came about, and the absorption being fantastic, it was a hard sell, because yes, we see it working on a petri dish, but you know, you go like, wow, look at what it's doing to this cell, this mucositis, but on a bench, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
In the real world scenario, it wasn't absorbing. And come 2020 and onwards, there are plenty of studies out there There are a couple of other factors as well, and you should be aware of this. For example, there are studies that have compared curcumin-based products with chlorhexidine, and the studies were clear. There is no difference in terms of adjunctive treatment. It's hard to change. Is hard. Also, the other thing is, some of these products have got big. Companies behind them that promote it and market it. I think brand awareness, brand recognition, and eventually there's also another side of it. One of the things I find very interesting, and it's certainly something that's come up a number of times, the number of people have come up to me and said, what if quote someone steals this idea? What if someone decides to do the same thing? I think that's actually the easy bit. I think where it's really difficult is, we're talking about this, and obviously you can hear the passion in my voice, but there have been that many challenges, Jesse. You need to have grit. You need to be able to stay the course. Right away. No secrets. It's expensive, and you start panicking. How am I going to pay for this? I won't say it, but it costs a lot of money to do this. And then many of the day where you think, oh, gee, should I just drop this? Is this just all too big? So I think that's the bigger challenge. Lots of people got lots of great ideas. They don't take off or they might take off only to simmer away. And that's because the challenges of, I guess, what I call life things happen personally, professionally. And if you've got the staying power, that's most of the battle.
What's the future hold for it? How do people get hold of it? There's people listening to this will be going, well, this sounds like an amazing product. How do we get our hands on it? How do we give it to our patients? How do we roll it out? How do we, take advantage of its therapeutic benefits?
Yeah, so the current Perigold gel is available at pharmacies, and you can go online and you'll find Perigold. It's on perigold.com, and you'll be able to get your hands on it. How we have seen this as we see it rolling out is because it's a potent and anti-inflammatory, and it's got these therapeutic benefits, in the individual ingredients, and of course I mentioned those studies. What the way we see it is it should be part of daily routine. After you've, say, for example, flossed, brushed your teeth, you would go on and apply Perigold gel, and we've got a number of patients have reported on the benefits of that. So that's how we see it. We actually see it to really replace some of, without mentioning the trade names out of respect for those brands, replace some of what we consider adjunctive oral care now. So yeah, we see it replacing that those products. Now, the other added benefit of this particular gel, it's made out of botanical products, right? So botanical ingredients is the mainstay thing here, and it's safe. It doesn't stain stain, but we've not had any reports of stain because of that microencapsulation. So we think it's going to be in every household. Now, fast forward, and I'm talking about these other products, spot treatment. I think that will be a spot treatment for, say, if you've got an ulcer, a particular spot. There's also a kids' teething product that's been going to be rolled out. There are a couple of options now for kids that are screaming from teething, and we've all been there. We're going to be, we'd be proud to put that out in the market because, again, botanicals, safe for infants and that sort of thing. And the thing that's probably excites me the most is when we did this study on cell lines that mimicked oral mucositis. If anyone's had oral mucositis from cancer treatment, it's a horrible thing to happen to your mucosa. You get severe ulcerations, very painful. And we're in the midst of developing a spray that can essentially coat the mucosa and significantly decrease the inflammation, ultimately improve quality of life. This is we're talking about hardcore suffering here. It'd be nice to alleviate that suffering because there's very little out there. So you can get your hands on the current Perigold gel out of pharmacies. We encourage dentists and, really patients and everyone to try it.
Yeah, mate, fantastic. So, ladies and gents, head across to perigold.com. I reckon get behind this product because, I've had the opportunity to sample it and try it, and I can tell you, As someone who has a fairly keen taste for things, this is very benign, like it's innocuous, there's no taste to it, it's easy, it works, and it's been really great. And I know in our practice we're handing it out to patients as well, which is great. So, anecdotally, I can tell you the feedback's been really great. So, Ramesh, I want to say thank you for taking the risk in developing that, because it does take risk in terms of time, money, effort, energy to put your hard-earned money and reputation behind it. And I really think that, you're doing a wonderful service for the profession and the public. So thank you, mate. Just to wrap up, Ramesh, I think there'll be people listening to this podcast saying, I really like the fact that Ramesh has these different elements of his life. If there was any bits of advice that you'd offer listeners to the podcast about, exploring different aspects of their career, whether it's academia, whether it's commercializing products or anything else, thoughts, comments, insights, lessons along the way, school of hard knocks.
Yeah. We talk about the success of Perigold. I've had my failures. I've done different things, from apps and websites, and to be brutally honest, I've got a long list of failed on projects. Sure, they hurt, and you dust yourself off, get back on your bike. But they've shaped Perigold. Someone says, how'd you do that? Actually, I know how I did that, because I tried to do it twice before and failed both times. And now I've got a refined process. I've actually got a process on how not to do it. And I think if you have an idea and you really want to do it, what's the worst that can happen? You fail. That's the worst that can happen. Honestly, that's the worst that can happen. And I often think in Australia, it's hard to fail because there's support, and people kind of get worried. What if I lose it all? I'm sure that's a big call to quote lose it all. But I think not trying and wondering what if, should have, could have. That's actually more painful, to look back over your shoulder and think that, I had this opportunity and I was, for a better word, too scared.
Yeah.
This fear of failure is an interesting one, because, I often chat to my son about this. Do this? Do you want to play the bass? No, I'm not interested in the bass. But really, he's saying, yes, but what if I'm crap at it?
Yeah.
Or do you want to be a leg spin bowler? No, I've got no interest in being a leg spin bowler. Really, what I'm hearing is I'm too scared that I might be crap and get hit for a six. Do you want to be a midfielder? No, I really don't want to. I enjoy watching soccer. No, I actually want to hit the ball into the net, but I'm too scared. And what I tell him is, you're not going to be the world's best in all three of those, but if you didn't try one of them or all three of them and find out which you might be a little bit good at, and with a lot of hard work, you're going to look back when you're 40 and 50 and 60 and go like, oh man, I can't kick a ball now, or I can't bowl that leg spin ball, and why didn't you try when you could have? So I think that fear of failure is, and if you can get over that piece, just ego, isn't it? Like, oh, it didn't work, not good enough, and what would my friends think? What would my colleagues think? What would the guy who sat next to me in school think? They're not here. Do they even think about you? How do you know you're so special? Thinking about you. I think sometimes we make up this crap in our heads about what, I love this book. It's called The Expectation Effect by David Robson. And I encourage your listeners to read this book. And it's all about our perceptions and our expectations and how it molds us and governs us. So I think that's probably the most important thing. Give it a go. Don't fear failure. No one's looking. Maybe a couple of people, but guess what? They're not looking because they absolutely want the best for you. Maybe they do. If they do, lucky you've got support. But to define how your life should be based on what others think, that in itself is failure in so many ways.
Yeah. Oh, mate, ladies and gents, I'd just encourage you to rewind and maybe the last 90 seconds or 2 minutes there and have a listen, because I think really there, what Ramesh has given you is the kind of the blueprint to success. And I think that there's so much wisdom in all of that, in that last couple of minutes, and of course the whole podcast as well, the story, the experiences, the intersection, and of course that bit about getting it done is critical. Ramesh, mate, you've been an incredibly generous guest today. I'm really excited for you. Your practice is thriving. Your academic life is thriving. Your Perrier Gold is thriving and reaching more people and having an impact in the world, which I know is very important to you to make a positive difference in people's lives. So, again, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge and salute you for all that you've achieved, and also just to thank you for taking the time to come and share it with us today. I'm really grateful, mate.
Jesse, thank you for the invitation to be on your podcast. You know, the words are out there. This is the number one podcast in the country for good reason. And also, you know, your audience should know that you've been one of my big supporters over the years. I've known you for many years now, Jesse, and I want to acknowledge your support and the support of your team and really your contacts. So appreciate everything you've done for me.
Oh, thank you, mate. You're very kind. All right, well, let's catch up soon.
Thank you, Jesse. All the best.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.